are on air for our Las Vegas NASCAR Weekend Preview with Fan for Racing Radio. And joining me for today's podcast is Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Good Wednesday morning, afternoon.
Yes, indeed. We're doing a podcast here Wednesday morning because I have some personal things I need to do on Thursday night, as well as the ARCA Menards Series West race will be taking place tomorrow night. So we'll get back to our regular schedule for next week. But here we go. Today we're going to be previewing the ARCA Menards Series West at the Las Vegas Bullring. Then we'll get into the NASCAR Truck Series, Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And we'll also start off with a few updates for the ARCA Menards Series and the ARCA East Series. 90 minutes into the show, if you're listening to this podcast and you want to fast forward to Hot Topics, you can do that. We'll start Hot Topics at the 90-minute mark. So our Fan for Racing crew, Jay, myself, and Andy will be on board for that. So with that, Jay, let's go ahead and we'll get into the updates for the ARCA Menards Series as well as the ARCA East. Their next races, the ARCA East is done. They don't have a next race. So they are finished. Sammy Smith won the championship at Bristol Motor Speedway. And the next race for the ARCA Menards Series is going to be the Sioux Chief PowerPex 200 on October the 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern at Salem Speedway. By the way, that is the final race for the Sioux Chief Showdown as well. So we'll know who the champion is for the Sioux Chief Showdown races this season in the ARCA Menards Series. That will be televised on MAV-TV. So fans, if you don't have MAV-TV, go to arcaracing.com and you'll be able to hear all the action on their radio player there. And they also have Race Central, so you can tune in there to hear what's going on. They will give you updates directly from the track of what's going on. Let's start with the ARCA Menards Series East and the point standings there, Jay, because they crowned their champion. We know that Sammy Smith is the champion. This will be the last time that we give you the rundown of the standings for the ARCA East because their season is done.
Yeah, you mentioned Sammy Smith picking up the championship with his run at Bristol, finishing second to Ty Gibbs. On the year, though, through their eight-race season, picking up three victories of his own, as well as seven top fives and seven top tens in one pole. Average start, 3.9. Average finish of 4.3. Took the championship by 34 points over Daniel Dye. And Dye had a good season of his own. Two top fives, seven top tens, minus 34 points back. Rajah Carruth come home in the third spot. Two top fives for him with five top tens. Max Gutierrez, another one. He did have a victory as well. One that four out of the eight that were not won by Ty Gibbs. We'll get to him a little further down the line, but Max picking up the win there. Two top fives and five top tens, ended up 52 points back. Joey East, 55 points back. Mason Diaz, 62. Parker Retzklav only made six of the eight races. So top six ran all eight races. Get into the ones that didn't make all the races, but where they finished in the top 10 in points. Parker Retzklav in seventh. Taylor Gray, we talked about him a little bit the other night. Eighth place, only made five races, all five top fives, top tens, along with a pole. Actually had a little bit better average finish than your champion, Sammy Smith, as Taylor ended with a 3.2 average finish. So we'll see what we get from him next year if he's able to have another full-time ride here, barring any injuries as we saw this year. Then in ninth, mentioned Ty Gibbs. Four of the races that were joint Arca Menard Series East as well as Arca Menard Series, Gibbs, four of them, four wins across the board. Four poles, four wins, four top fives, four top tens. Average finish of 1.0, clearly. Phenomenal season for Ty Gibbs, and we'll talk a little bit more about him with the main Arca Menard Series. And then in 10th place, Stephanie Moyer. Six races, two top tens, ended up 222 points out for the championship. But I think what we got to look at here is these guys and girls getting what they can do next year, full-time ride. We'll see Ty Gibbs obviously moving. Well, we don't know for sure yet, but we expect to move to the Xfinity Series. So kind of opens the door a lot for these other races that Ty Gibbs was winning.
Yes, indeed. Some really phenomenal stats there for Taylor Gray as well as Ty Gibbs racing part-time in the Arca East, but also for Sammy Smith, who won the championship there. Really great run. I was impressed with Roger Carruth for Rev Racing coming in third place, Daniel Dye in second place. They had some really tough competition there. But let's go ahead. I don't want to run out of time here. We've got the Arca Menard Series standings to cover here as well. As I mentioned, their next race is going to be at Salem Speedway. So we definitely want to cover that as well, because that's going to be the next to the last race before their season finale at Kansas in October.
Well, real quick, if you don't mind, I'm going to do the going to do the Sioux Chief Showdown points. You mentioned that's the last race
that.
Nine races in, one more to go. This one, barring anything unusual happening, it will be Ty Gibbs. Him and Corey Heim are your top two, as we've seen them battle, and we'll talk about in the main Arca Menard Series. But Ty Gibbs leads the Sioux Chief Showdown. Nine starts, six of them victories. Corey Heim is at 364, 17 points behind him. Nine starts. He's got two of the wins, so between them, they got eight of the nine wins. Nick Sanchez, 333 points. Thad Moffitt, 312. They've kind of been having their own little battle. And then Taylor Gray, mentioned him. Only six starts out of the nine, and he was able to come home be in the fifth spot so far at 277 points. And that's what those top fives will continue to do for you. Then you got Brad Smith, Jesse Love, Daniel Dye, Tony Constantino, and Alex Club. Again, making limited starts, not all nine starts. The one I want to highlight there, Daniel Dye. He was another one to pick up a victory between Ty Gibbs and Corey Himes. They had the eight combined between the two of them. Daniel Dye picking up the other one for the Sioux Chief Showdowns.
Okay, right, and in the Arca Menard Series, there's just two drivers really that are competing for that championship, and I think the second driver is still mathematically in it.
He is. Again, it would be two races left, obviously, is mathematically. But here as of late, Ty Gibbs has really put in a stranglehold on it. 26 points.
Yes.
It is the biggest gap we've seen all year between these two. They were swapping it back and forth week to week, 1, 2, 3-point difference. But Ty Gibbs really stretching it out here as of late. 18 races in so far, 10 victories. Over half of them have gone to Ty Gibbs. 17 top fives, 17 top tens. Nine of those have been poles. Led a total of 1,435 laps. 2.1 average start, 3.1 average finish. Now, Corey Heim, his stat line, not ashamed to look at. 18 races, 6 victories, 15 top fives, and all 18 top tens. He's also got 3 poles, has led 405 laps. Average start at 3.6, and actually a little bit better average finish at 2.9. But those pole awards, as well as other contingency awards, given that Ty Gibbs now that 26-point advantage. Here we'll go through the top five real quick. Thad Moffitt, 16 starts, is in third. He's 286 points. I mentioned them having their own battle. Nick Sanchez, 16 starts, 8 top fives and 12 top tens.
Only one point behind
him and Thad Moffitt. So they're having their own little points battle. Then you got Brad Smith in fifth. Six on back, we get down to only making about half of the starts. Drew Dollar in sixth. Taylor Gray, again, got to mention it, seventh place, 10 starts, 10 top tens, eight of them being top five. So doing the best at the starts he's got after that personal injury he had. Then rounding out the top 10, D.L. Wilson, Kyle Sieg, and Jesse Love. Love, we're going to talk about here for the West Series, going after the championship there to be a back-to-back Arca Menards West champion.
Yes, indeed. And speaking of the Arca Menards Series West, they are racing at the Bullring in Las Vegas this weekend in the Star Nursery 150. That race will take place Thursday night, September the 23rd at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time. That's 11:30 p.m. Eastern time. Now, they will have live streaming available on TrackPass, but you can also hear the radio at arcaracing.com, as well as follow along with the highlights via Race Central. Now, it's a 0.375-mile paved oval. They will be racing 150 laps to cover a distance of 0.25 miles. Now, Thursday, September the 31st, the garage will open at 1:30. They'll have practice and qualifying at 4:45 p.m. The race again at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time. That's 11:30 Eastern. And there's going to be a lot to look forward to in this race as they continue to wind down their season for this year.
Yeah, they have three races remaining on their schedule. They've had a couple of weeks off after the event on the trying 12-turn road course, which was at Portland International Raceway, and now they're back in action on a track layout that's more familiar to its competitors, and that's, of course, racing on that Bullring at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, which is anything but easy. Sharon mentioned it's a 0.375-mile paved oval. And it's located just adjacent to the facility's 1.5-mile tri-oval. It's going to host the three NASCAR National Series this weekend. It's a tricky short track despite its relatively simple layout.
Okay, now not including the West Season Opener at the 1 Mile Phoenix Raceway, Thursday's Star Nursery 150 at the Bullring is going to mark the series' fourth short track race of the season. Now, tickets are still available, so if you want to go to that event, I would check it out because these guys put on a pretty good show. The race, again, will be shown live on NBC Sports Gold Track Pass starting at 8:30 p.m. Pacific, 11:30 Eastern. And a replay of this race will broadcast on NBC Sports Network on Thursday, September the 30th at 5 p.m. Eastern time. So you want to set your DVRs for that if you're not able to get out there to the track or follow along live.
Now, the West Series is returned to the Bullring last season for two races in February and September. That was after a seven-year hiatus. Sam Mayer and Gracie Trotter won those events, becoming the seventh and eighth West Series winners at the 35-year-old track. Now, with neither entered in Thursday night's Star Nursery 150, we're guaranteed to see another first-time Vegas winner in the series. Trotter's Bullring victory, of course, was historic as she became the first female driver to win an ARCA-sanctioned race. Now, on Thursday night, we got five drivers that are looking to become the second.
Yes, indeed. There's Jolynn Wilkinson, Amber Slagle, Amber Balcane, Mariah Boudreau, and Bridget Burgess are all entered in the Star Nursery 1. Wilkinson and Balcane will compete for Bill McAnally Racing, the team Trotter drove for when she won at the Bullring just last year. Burgess is the only West Series full-timer in that group, and she races her family-owned number 88 HMH Construction Chevrolet with her mother, Sarah, as her crew chief. Slagle is a regular competitor in various late model divisions and a mechanic and crew chief for Cook Racing Technologies, and will make her the second West Series start driving the number 17W Sunwest Construction MMI CRT Chevrolet for Steve McGowan. Boudreaux will make her third West Series start driving the number 77 Jans RexMD All-Phase Construction Toyota for Joe Nava.
Now Thursday's Star Nursery 150 is a big race as it relates to the season-long ARCA Menards Series West Championship battle. Mention Jesse Love. He won two of the three short track races this season that they've contested so far in 2021. Both at California's Irwindale Speedway. He'll be looking to extend his points lead. With three races remaining on the year, Love, who is the defending champion, currently holds a 19-point edge over second place Jake Drew in the championship standings. The 16-year-old finished second and third in the pair of bull rings last season, qualified on the general tire pole for the September event. The other drivers in Thursday's field who have West Series experience at the bullring are, as we mentioned, Burgess, Bobby Hillis Jr., Trevor Huddleston, Joey East, Takuma Koga, Todd Souser, and Kyle Keller.
Okay, now we'll go over the complete entry list here. We'll start from the bottom up, and I guess I'll go ahead and get started. We'll start with the number 99, Cole Moore. He's driving for Bill McAnally Racing with Mario Isola on top of the pit box. He hails from Orangevale, California, and his sponsor, Napa Power Premium Plus. Number 88, Bridges Burgess from Tulay, Utah. Again, her mother, Sarah Burgess, on top of the pit box for the HMH Construction Chevrolet.
Number 77, that'll be Mariah Boudreaux, we mentioned. Dave McKenzie as the crew chief for the Joe Nava Toyota, coming out of Colorado Springs, Colorado. And then Joey East out of Madero, California, driving the number 54, Mike Nocke, owned and crew chief Ford.
Okay, and the number 51, we had him on our show about a week or so ago, Dean Thompson from Arlington, Texas, driving the Thompson Pipe Group Ford. That car is owned by Brucati Sunrise Ford, and Travis Thurkettle will be his crew chief. Not yet determined who the crew chief is going to be for the number 42, driven by Christian Rose from Martinsburg, West Virginia. He'll be driving the Visit West Virginia Tourism Chevrolet.
Next on the list is the Mike Holleran, owned and crew chief Ford, number 38 of Stafford Smith out of Thousand Oaks, California, sponsored by CART Idaho. And then one of the Pedronicillis, P.J. Pedronicillis, in the number 33, comes out of Sonoma, California, and running the Paul Pedronicillis-owned Toyota. Ty Joyner will be the crew chief on that machine.
Okay, and the number 31 is the other Pedronicillis, and that is Paul Pedronicillis from Sonoma, California. He'll be driving the Pedronicillis mobile bottling Chevrolet, and he'll have Rod Nealon on top of the pit box. Ed Ash will be on the pit box for the number 27 Bobby Hillis Chevrolet from Phoenix, Arizona, their sponsor, First Impression Press CD Projects.
The number 21 John Wood owned and crew chief Stoney's Rock and Country Certified Service. The driver will be Josh Finopoulos, then up to the 19. That is the Bill McAnally Toyota. Driver will be Amber Balcane out of Canyon Lake, California, in the Icon Technologies Limited machine. John Camarelli will be the crew chief there.
Okay. Also, another one of our females in the race, in the 17W, Amber Slagle from Sylvan Lake, Michigan, will be driving the Sunwest Construction MMI CRT Chevrolet, and Sean Samuels will be her crew chief. Chad Johnston will be on top of the pit box for the number 17 Ford Performance Ford, driven by Taylor Gray from Mooresville, North Carolina.
Next on the list is our championship points leader and defending West Series champion, Jesse Love, in the number 16 Napa Auto Parts Toyota, owned by Bill McAnally. And the crew chief there will be Travis Sharp. Love coming right out of Redwood City, California. And out of Aromas, California, is Todd Souza. He's in the number 13 Toyota, owned by Kelly Souza. Michael Munoz calling the shots for that Central Coast Cabinets machine.
Okay, it looks like John Wood is going to have another entry, the number 11, with Mitchell Industrial Park on the sponsorship for his Ford, but they don't know who the driver or crew chief, at least at this printing, is for that car. So watch for that car to be in the race. The number 9, Jake Drew from Fullerton, California, will be behind the wheel of the Bob Brunkati Sunrise Force Ford Lucas Oil Offset Sports Stilo USA machine. Jeff Schrader will be on top of the pit box.
The number 7, owned and sponsored or owned and crew chief by Jerry Pitts, has an international flavor. Not just because it's a Toyota, but it's Takuma Koga behind the wheel from Nagoya, Japan. And then another California driver, Agoura Hills, California, Trevor Huddleston in the number 6 Bob Brunkati Ford. Bill Sedgwick calling the shots for the Sunrise Ford Lucas Oil and Haas Development Terraclean.
In the number 5 from Las Vegas, Nevada, is Kyle Keller. He'll be driving the BBR Aeros Environmental Mojave Construction Ford for Jerry Pitts, and Charlie Wilson will be on top of the pit box. In the number 4 will be Eric Nascimento from Manteca, California. He'll be behind the wheel of the custom equipment Paint Skipco Welding Toyota for his own race team with Mike Nascimento on top of the pit box.
Well, we mentioned Jolene Wilkinson earlier in the number 1 Toyota for McAnally, Mario Isola, as the crew chief for the Instacote Premium Products Toyota. And if you don't know, she's a next generation of the Alabama gang, which means she comes from Hueytown, Alabama.
There you go. Okay, let's cover the series point standings for this group from the ARCA West, because they've got a lot of people that are in contention here. And this is probably our closest contested series of the group.
It has been all year long. You mentioned Jesse Love having a 19-point lead so far. 6 races, 2 victories on the year, 4 top fives, 5 top tens. But right with him there, Jake Drew, 3 top fives and 5 top tens, picking up 2 poles. And then Paul Pedernicilli Jr., 3 top fives and 4 top tens, is only 20 points back, as is Cole Moore, same stat line minus the pole, 3 top fives and 4 top tens. Joey East, another one that has a victory, 4 top fives and 4 top tens, 23 points back. Todd Souza in 6th place is 29 points back. Trevor Huddleston at minus 32. Tacoma Koga, 1 top 5, 2 top 10s on the year, is only 57 points back. Bridget Burgess, 2 top 10s on the year, is 61 back. And then Bobby Hillis Jr. at minus 67, 2 top 10s on the year. 10 drivers having made all 6 starts so far. 67 points, mathematically still good from 1st to 10th. Again, mathematics don't do a whole lot when Jesse Love's up there top five and winning races. But mathematically, all of them still have a chance in these final three races.
Do you have a favorite for the winner of this race?
Well, taking a Jesse Love aside, I really think Trevor Huddleston is the one to watch this weekend, or at least one of them.
Okay, that's a good, that's a really good pick. But I'm going to go. Jesse Love is really good out there in the West. I'll take Jesse Love for this week. But I also think that Jake Drew is going to give him a run for his money.
Well, and those two at the points battle could be interesting. The other one that I kind of thought, like I said, Jesse Love, obviously, you got to consider a favorite with his two victories
mm-hmm.
already. But I think Joey East is another one. Already having the one victory and four top fives on the year, I think that's another one that we really got to watch, especially when it comes to the bull ring.
Okay, just some quick late-breaking news here. If you follow the late model racing, there's a big race going on this weekend, the Credit Union 300 at Martinsville Speedway. Well, Motor Racing Network and TrackPass on NBC Sports Gold are going to broadcast that Valley Star Credit Union 300 at Martinsville this weekend. So this is kind of a big deal that MRN is going to be a part of that broadcast there on NBC Sports Gold Track Pass. So that is the one of the richest and most prestigious NASCAR late model races of the year. So the fact that MRN is going to be the voice of NASCAR providing flag-to-flag coverage, I think, is pretty cool.
That's huge and awesome. You know, we've talked about that. As NASCAR took over the ARCA Menards series, the East and the West, we know they do a lot of involvement with these late model series across the country. To have it on MRN, yes, is a very huge thing, as that just is showing the lift and exposure these series are getting.
And we've had some of the up-and-coming late-model drivers on our show here recently. In fact, Monday night, we had Blake Lothian on our show. He just won in NASCAR's Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Touring Series at Hickory Motor Speedway, his fourth event of the year, and he came home with a win. So there's a lot of really up-and-coming stars. This is where you get to know these guys before they get into the ranks of NASCAR. So I really encourage everybody to hit the local short track, and if you're anywhere around Martinsville, you'll definitely want to hit the this Credit Union 300 that's taking place there this weekend.
It is. Mentioned it on Monday night when talking with Blake. The Xfinity Series, says that's where their names are made. Well, we get to know their names and get to know them before their names are made.
Yes, indeed. It's one of our pleasures to do so. So, okay, so with that, we're ready to move on to the NASCAR series. All three series are going to be racing at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. We're going to start with the NASCAR Truck Series. They'll be racing Friday, September the 24th at Las Vegas Motor Speedway at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll be covering a distance of, well, they'll be racing 134 laps. Those three stages are 40 laps for both stage one and two, so they'll end on lap 40 for stage one, lap 80 for stage two, and then lap 134 for stage three. That is the last lap of the race, and if my math is correct, that's a total of 54 laps. That race will be covered on Fox Sports 1. Radio coverage is available on MRN and SiriusXM and NASCAR Radio. Now, what we have available to us here on Wednesday morning is that John Hunter Nemechek will start from the Cometic Gasket Pole for the Victoria's Voice Foundation 200 presented by Westgate Resorts. for the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series at Las Vegas on Friday. Next, we'll have Chandler Smith. He's starting second. Those are both KBM, Kyle Busch Motorsports cars, followed by Stuart Friesen, Zane Smith, Carson Hocevar, Matt Crafton, Ben Rhodes, Todd Gilliland, Sheldon Creed, and Austin Hill to round out the top 10. So the entry list for this week includes 37 drivers for 40 spots. So some of the notable drivers that will be in this race include the number 3 for Howie DeSavino. Then you've got Brett Moffitt in the number 25. Brett Holmes will be driving the number 32. Dylan Lupkin behind the wheel of the number 33. McLaughlin will be behind the wheel of the 34. Hacker, I want to say Jeff Hacker, but I might be wrong. Maybe Chad
Chris,
Hacker.
Chris.
I can't remember. Chris Hacker in the number 45. And Drew Dollar will be behind the wheel of the number 51 on this entry list. Let's go over the starting lineup, Jay, so that people know how these guys are going to be going. We've covered the top 10, so let's start from the bottom. Row 19.
All right, row 19 going to be by himself. Ray Ciccarelli in the number 49 CMI Motorsports Ford.
Okay, and in row 18, starting number 36, in the number 34 is Dylan Lupton. And then in the number 32, as we mentioned earlier, starting 35th is Brett Holmes. He'll be driving the Southern States Bank Chevrolet.
In the Enoch Supreme Lubricants Toyota, that'll be Spencer Davis in the number 11. Starting 33rd, the number 12, Tate Fogelman with the Solid Rock Carrier Chevrolet.
Row 16, starting in 32nd place, driving the number 10, Fastener Supply Company Ford, is Jennifer Jo Cobb. In the number 20, Hair Club Chevrolet, is Spencer Boyd.
Number 33 mentioned C.J. McLaughlin in a Toyota, and I want to be clear here. We're talking about Tanner Gray now. Tanner Gray in the Ford Performance Ford, number 15, starting at row 15, spot number 29.
Okay, now we'll go to row 14. In the number 30, starting in 28th place, in the North American Motor Car Toyota is Danny Bone. Chris Hacker will be driving the number 45 Charred Flag Chevrolet.
In a pair of Chevrolets, the 02, that'll be rookie Chris Wright. And to his inside, mentioned Howie DeSavino the third in the number 3 Chevrolet.
Row 12, again, a pair of Chevrolets here. Driving the number 6 for Hill Motorsports Chevrolet is Tyler Hill. And Grant Enzinger will be behind the wheel of the number 9 Blaster Chevrolet starting in 23rd place.
Picking up a start here in the number 25 Rackley Roofing Chevrolet, that'll be Brett Moffitt, as we mentioned. And the 04 is Corey Roper in the Dean Ford.
Starting in row 10, on the outside is Jack Wood. He'll be driving the number 24 Martin Auto Color Chevrolet. And Chase Purdy, another rookie, will be behind the wheel of the number 23 BamaBuggies.com Chevrolet.
Row number 9, the 18th spot, there's the flagship KBM truck, the number 51, Drew Dollar, the driver this week, in the Sunbelt Rental Toyota, and then rookie Haley Deegan in the number 1 Craftsman Ford.
Row 8, starting in 16th place on the outside, is Tyler Ankrum in the number 26 Lunai Chevrolet. And starting 15th in the number 98 this week is Christian Eckes for Curb Records Toyota.
The 14th spot goes to number 40, Ryan Truex, in the Marquis Spa Chevrolet. And to his inside, spot 13 is the 22 of Austin Wayne Self in the Go Texan A&M Technical Solutions Chevrolet.
Okay, now we're up to row six. These guys are starting in the 11th and 12th spots. We'll start with Derek Krause in the number 19 on the outside. He'll be in the Napa Auto Care Toyota number 19. And Johnny Sauter will be driving his Toyota in the number 13 on the inside.
And then we already went through the top 10 starting positions. They were your 10 playoff drivers. I'm not sure, Sharon, if you can clear this up. I thought, being that Todd Gilliland and Austin Hill would have been back two positions starting in the final two spots, their ninth and tenth, based on elimination. But it looks like Sheldon Creed split in between them there.
Yeah, that's a little confusing because Sheldon Creed definitely had the best run. The only thing I can think is it's done by the metric qualifying system here because they don't have any practice of qualifying. So I'm not sure why Sheldon Creed's in that ninth spot, to be quite honest, unless they're looking at the whole year metrics to determine his starting spot. I'm not sure.
Well, that's why I say I thought the playoff drivers were to start in their top spots, and being that the Gilliland and Austin Hill were eliminated, that's why I thought Sheldon should be up in the at least the eighth spot then. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a surprise to me why he's stuck in ninth. I'm not sure what the answer is there. I will mention that Tyler Reddick holds the track record dating back to October 1st of 2016. He had a time of 1 hour, 31 minutes, and 47 seconds. His speed at the track is 143.163. So I know a lot of these drivers will be aiming for that this weekend.
Oh, most certainly. And get into the point standings here. Thought I had that pulled up already. Oh, there it is. Mentioned that we did have the first set of eliminations here for the Camping World Truck Series. So resetting the points, John Hunter Nemechek, back to your points lead, 50 playoff points built up, so he'll start at 3,050. Sheldon Creed has 3,026 in second spot. Third spot will be Ben Rhodes at 3,019. Zane Smith now at 3,009, having picked up, I'm sorry, that was Zane Smith. 3,006 will be Chandler Smith, picking up that victory this past weekend, advanced him into the round, as well as gave him the five additional playoff points. Gives him a little bit of a head start. That puts him ahead of Matt Crafton, who's at 3,004. Carson Hocevar, rookie, at 3,002. Stuart Friesen mentioned at 3,001. Todd Gilliland and Austin Hill, they got reset. They'll be at 2,100 and then 2,094 for Austin Hill, as they can still battle for the fifth spot.
Yes, John Hunter Nemechek, I'll tell you what, those 50 playoff points are making a huge difference for him. He's got 10 stage wins to go along with his five victories, and that's what's putting him in that number one spot. When you compare Sheldon Creed to the three race wins, six stage wins, and 26, close to half of what John Hunter Nemechek has.
Yeah, that's what he built up through the year. But the other thing is the playoffs is when it's time to go. And Sheldon Creed has been going from the get-go.
Yeah.
Darn near swept the entire first round. So going to have to keep an eye on him. He ended up with a rough finish there at Bristol, but that's Bristol racing, as they say.
Yes, indeed. And it's really amazing what we're seeing here in the Truck Series. Surprise, many people very much surprised that both Todd Gilliland and Austin Hill were the drivers that fell below the cut line. And the big story here in the Truck Series is that Chandler Smith, the rookie, won last week He was in that 10th spot facing elimination and was able to win the race to punch his ticket into the playoffs. Zane Smith in that number 9 spot also raced his way in to the playoffs and was able to save himself from potential elimination headed into that race.
The other thing I think we got to look at here when we talk about the playoffs, so many storylines still to continue, but the Truck Series is a little bit different. 7 races for their playoffs. First 3 races, they eliminate 2. The next 3 races to get to the final 4, you got to eliminate 4. And that puts Stuart Friesen, rookie Carson Hocevar, Matt Crafton, and Chandler Smith, even though he just picked up that victory, moved up to from starting 10th in the last round to 5th in this round, is still right now on that cut line as they enter round number 2.
Yes, and keeping in mind that the final 4 are the 4 that race at Phoenix for the championship. Right now, the top 4 drivers are John Hunter Nemechek and Sheldon Creed, of course, but we also have Ben Rhodes. And Zane Smith, who was facing elimination last week, is now in that top 4.
That goes back to, again, the playoff points they have built up. Zane doesn't have the victory, but has 9 points built up in his playoff bucket, as Larry McReynolds liked to say. Mentioned it. Once he got into the second round and they reseed it, instead of starting 9th in the first round, 9th out of 10, he's now starting 4 out of the 8. So that gives him that advantage as to where he starts at least this next round.
So I think that what these guys are proving, Jay, is just about anything can happen in these playoff races. And somebody who may be at the bottom of these 8 could end up being a star when it's all said and done. Let's look at the schedule for the Truck Series, because I want to tell you the tracks. I'm sorry, I hit the wrong thing here. I want to tell you the tracks that they're going to be racing at in this penultimate round, I guess, the round of 8, that will determine who will be the final 4 drivers that will be competing for that championship at Phoenix. Okay, it's coming up here now. September. Okay, we know that they are racing this week at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. The next 2 races will be at Talladega Super Speedway on October the 2nd, and then Martinsville on October 30th will be the elimination race that will eliminate 4 drivers. So that's you got to look at who are the drivers that will shine in these next 3 races, Las Vegas, Talladega, and Martinsville.
Well, a couple of things I look at here when we talk about this schedule and the drivers that are remaining. First off, being that they have the shorter season, shorter playoffs, and they started their playoffs a little bit earlier, you go this week at Las Vegas, Talladega the week of October 2nd, and then they have 3 weeks off before their elimination race on Saturday, October 30th. We see this regularly throughout their season. They have a little bit bigger gaps between races. That gap, though, between Talladega and that elimination race then at Martinsville, that's a brutal 3 weeks for them, I guess, depending on your viewpoint. If you're locked in and good to go, maybe not so much. But that could be stressful for those that then got to wait it out and go after that elimination race at Martinsville.
Yes, it can be very stressful. Some notes here. Let's see, we've still got a couple more minutes here. Some notes here with regard to this weekend. Actually, I don't have a whole lot to tell. We've already kind of, well, we will say this. Howie DeSofino is going to be driving the number 3 this weekend, and he's racing to honor his late mother's memory at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. So following the most recent truck race at Bristow, Bristol last week. Howie DeStefano's mother, Dawn, lost her 5-year battle with cancer on Saturday, September the 18th. So Howie is determined to keep his emotions in check. He hails from Chesterfield, Virginia, and he's decided to fulfill his obligations to Jordan Anderson Racing and his marketing partners and go ahead and race in honor of his mother's passing. His mother's last words to her only son was, "Pass them all." This is going to be a debut for him at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. So just to kind of on a sad note there, Howie DeStefano is just 20. He's going to make his fifth truck race start of the season this Friday night, and he hopes to rebound from his disappointing 28th place finish at Bristol. He's got his longtime partner, Bud's Heating and Air Conditioning, is going to serve as the primary marketing partner on that number 3 Chevrolet, while Keys Vacations will hold an associate role during that triple header weekend with the 3 National Series all racing at Las Vegas. Her name, his mother's name, will be on the passenger side door and will adorn a special name rail decal as well. So in addition to Bristol, DeStefano is making his Camping World Truck Series debut. He made a debut at Richmond, Virginia in April, and he competed at both Texas Motor Speedway and Pocono Raceway in June. He is also a 6-time participant in the ARCA Menards Series, where he has earned 2 top 10 finishes for AM Racing. So sad news, he's racing for H. Dill Racing this weekend in that number 3. So kind of on a sad note, but we certainly wish him the best as he races this weekend at Las Vegas.
Most certainly do. Can't even imagine being in that kind of position that he's in there with that situation. But continuing, like you said, to honor his obligations and, as well as then race for his mom.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Now we are going to move on now to the Xfinity Series. They also are going to be racing at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. Their race takes place on Saturday, September the 25th, and the time will be 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. They will race 200 laps. The first 2 laps are 45 laps apiece, so the first stage will end on lap 45, the second stage on lap 90, and then the third stage will be 111 laps and will end on lap 200. TV coverage will be on NBC Sports Network, radio coverage on PRN, and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio. Now, the defending Xfinity Series champion, Austin Cindric, in the number 2, will start the race in first place, will start the first race of the 2021 playoffs from the pole. This year's regular season champion, Austin Cindric, in the number 16 for colleague racing, will start alongside him in second. Then it will be Justin Allgaier in third, Justin Haley in fourth, and Harrison Burton rounding out the top 5, followed by the 5 drivers, Ty Gibbs in the number 54, Daniel Hemric, Brandon Jones, Noah Gragson, and Riley Herbst will round out the top 10. Based on points, Timmy Hill in the number 13 did not qualify. So Jay and I will go ahead and cover the rest of the lineup here, starting from the bottom up, so that you know who else will be in this race.
All right, mentioned one did not qualify, so that means we have a full field. Row number 20, the 40th spot will be the 74, C.J. McLaughlin in the SiAPT Chevrolet, and then B.J. McLeod in his own B.J. McLeod Motorsport Chevrolet, number 99, starting 39th.
In row 19, starting in 38th spot, will be David Starr in the number 61 Angry Crab Shack Toyota. And Landon Castle will be behind the wheel of the number 4 Chevrolet, starting in 37th spot.
Moving up to spot number 36, there we find Bailey Curry in the number 15 Team JDMotorsports.com Chevrolet. And Carson Ware in the number 52 for a Keep It Safe, Keep It Secure.net Chevrolet.
Row 17, we have Matt Jaskel in the number 66 Auto Parts for Less.com Toyota, and JJ Yaley behind the wheel of the number 17 Parlor Chevrolet, starting in 33rd place.
The number 90, Spencer Boyd in the Mini Dodge Chevrolet, Mini Dog, that's Dog, not Dodge,
I think
sorry.
It should be.
I have a reading problem. that was me. Mini Dog Chevrolet. And then rookie Ryan Vargas in another Team JDMotorsports.com Chevrolet, the number 6, starting in the 31st spot.
Okay, Ryan, of course, one of our rookies in the race. In row 15, starting in 30th place, is Mason Massey driving the number 78 Gerber Collision and Glass Chevrolet. Matt Mills will be behind the wheel of the JF Electric Toyota, number 5.
The number 31 this week will be Ty Dillon in that South Point Hotel and Casino Chevrolet, and the 02 for our motorsport Chevrolet, that'll be Brett Moffitt.
Okay, next up is row 13, and Kyle Weatherman will start on the outside position in 26th spot, driving the number 47 Porrec Chevrolet. And in the numbers 26, starting on the inside, is Dylan Lupton, driving for Marquis General Engineering Toyota.
And the number 23, there we find Blaine Perkins in a Chevrolet. And the number 48, another rookie, Big Machine Spike Cooler Chevrolet with Jade Buford as the driver.
Another one of our rookies. Okay, in row 11, starting on the outside in the number 0, Forever Lawn Chevrolet is Jeffrey Earnhardt. And then one of our regulars here on Fan for Racing Radio is 21st position on the inside in the number 7, Joe Graff Jr. for Bucked Up Energy in the Chevrolet.
RSS Racing number 39 starts 20th, the number 39 of Ryan Sieg, CMR Construction and Roofing, A-Game Ford. And then Tommy Joe Martins in the Market Rebellion Chevrolet, number 44, in the 19th spot.
Row 9, starting on the outside in 18th position, is Josh Williams driving the number 92 Silverton Hotel and Casino Chevrolet. And in 17th place on the inside in the number 36 is Alex LeBay driving the Globocam Chevrolet.
Picking up a sponsor for Las Vegas is the number 68 of Brandon Brown. He's got the Trade the Chain Chevrolet in the 16th spot. The 15th spot is the number 1, Josh Berry, for the PFJ Thank a Trucker Chevrolet. That is the number 1 Junior Motorsports machine of Michael Annette. Annette had to step out yet again.
We wish Michael Annette the best as he continues to recover. In row 7, starting on the outside in 14th position is Jeb Burton. He's one of the playoff drivers driving the number 10 Nutrien AG Solutions Chevrolet. And in the inside, also a playoff driver in 13th place driving the number 51 is Jeremy Clements, driving the First Pacific Funding Chevrolet.
Row number 6, there we have number 2, Myatt Schneider, who's a playoff driver in the Alsco uniform Chevrolet. And then we got a rookie filling in now in the number eight, Sam Mayer, for the big machine Carly Pierce Chevrolet, another junior motorsports machine.
Okay. In row five, these are the top 10 drivers that we've mentioned before. Riley Herbst in the number 98 South Point Ford, and Noah Gregson in the number 9 Bass Pro Shops True Timber BRCC Chevrolet.
A spot goes to the number 19 Brandon Jones in the Menards Geldwin Toyota. And another Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota in the 7th spot. That's the 18 of Daniel Hemrick, Poppy Bank Toyota.
In row 3, we have one of our rookies, as well as a playoff driver, having a phenomenal season. Ty Gibbs will, again, be behind the wheel of the number 54 Interstate Batteries Toyota. And on the inside in the number 20, it's Harrison Burton driving his Dex Imaging Toyota.
Justin Haley's got the 4th spot in his number 11 Leaf Filter Gutter Protection Chevrolet for College Racing. And then Junior Motorsports Brandt Chevrolet, number 7, Justin Allgaier.
Okay, and in our front row, starting in on the outside, is just A.J. Allmendinger in the number 16 Hyper Rice Chevrolet. And in the pole position is Austin Cindric driving the number 22 Odyssey Battery Ford. So the track record goes back to 2016, Jay, and Kyle Busch holds that. It's a time of 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 47 seconds at a speed of 145.415 miles per hour. And again, I think a lot of these drivers would love to break that record this weekend in the 4th annual ALSCO's Uniform 302.
As I say, I don't know if we can call that breaking news that Kyle Busch holds a record in the Xfinity Series.
That is so true. But there you have it, the lineup here. Let's go over the series point standings because these guys ended their season last week at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, but now they have an opportunity to start their playoffs. This is the first race of their playoffs in the Xfinity Series. So this is going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Now we want the driver points after the reset. So.
Well, and we saw the battle on the track to win that regular season championship. And it played out in the point standings as Austin Cindric and A.J. Allmendinger are tied to start the round, the playoffs, round number one, at 2,044. Both of them having made up 44 playoff points. Then you go down to Justin Allgaier, who mentioned this, almost double what he has. He'll start at 2020, so he's 20 points, 24 points below the leaders, 20 points up on the cut line. Noah Gregson moves up into the 3rd spot, having picked up 2 victories and built up 17 playoff points. 5th spot, Justin Haley's
spot.
At. Yeah. I'm
you
sorry, Noah
third,
Gregson's in 4th. Yeah.
I did.
Gregson in 4th, Justin Haley in 5th at 2015. Daniel Hemrick doesn't have the victory but has 14 playoff points. He'll start in 6th. Jeb Burton at 2009. Harrison Burton at 2008, only a point between the Burtons. Then you got Myatt Schneider. The one victory gave him 5 playoff points, so he'll start at 2005. Brandon Jones at 2003. Riley Herbst picked up 1 stage win, so he starts at 2001. And then you got Jeremy Clements, your 12th and final spot, starting at 2,000 points even.
Okay, so... again, these guys are just starting their round, but if you're keeping track, at the end of their round will be the elimination race. So who are the bottom 4 there in that round in the series?
Right right now it's Jeremy Clements, Riley Herbst, Brandon Jones, and Myatt Schneider. That cut line is only 3 points, where you got Burton, Harrison Burton first, and then another point up of Jeb Burton. So tight battle, but as it is right now, Brandon Jones, Myatt Schneider, Brandon Jones, and Riley Herbst, along with Jeremy Clements, that are underneath the cut line.
Okay. Now, I do want to mention, too, that, let's see here, the schedule for this round, for the Xfinity Series, two of the races are the same as the trucks, Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend, and then October 2nd, they'll be racing at Talladega Super Speedway. But their cutoff race here in the Xfinity Series will actually take place October the 9th at Charlotte Motor Speedway's road course. So that's something to keep in mind as you think about these drivers and how this might play out for the series.
It certainly was, and NASCAR did a wonderful job in all three series setting up these cutoff races. We saw the Xfinity Series end their championship, or end their regular season championship at Bristol, where the Truck Series and the Cup Series, that was a cutoff race. Moving into this next round, the trucks jump right to Martinsville, but the Cup Series and the Xfinity Series, they got to go through that Charlotte Roval. And we've seen how that race has played out in the past. Great place to have it as a cutoff race, I think. We got that excitement just like we did for the Cup Series regular season finale at Daytona. Anything can be possible.
Yes, indeed. Las Vegas Motor Speedway is one of the 1.5-mile tracks that these guys will race on. A lot of these guys are really good on 1.5-mile tracks. So I expect this to be an action-packed event, Jay.
And this round in particular for the Xfinity and the Cup Series, then in the middle of that, you throw in that wild card of Talladega. I know the trucks are also running. Yeah, they go Las Vegas, Talladega, and go to Martinsville. Having that Talladega race in the middle, in a wild card in and of itself, and then we're not just talking about playoff drivers. I think that may be where we don't see it very often, but here in the playoffs, see a non-playoff driver picking up one of these events.
Yes, and that's not out of the realm of possibility because, as I mentioned, so many of these drivers are so good. You've got drivers that are really good on super speedways that maybe the other tracks are not their opportunity, but Talladega may be their opportunity to really shine on the national stage.
I know I wanted to mention in the truck series for sure. You got Grant Enfinger battling for the 11th spot. Again, that's as high as he can go. He currently holds that spot, letting it be known that he maybe should have been in the playoffs. Here in the Xfinity Series, you got the same situation. Several drivers that may not have been eligible or just missed the playoffs still showing that they're in contention for their best spot, which would be 13th.
Yes, indeed. Some news that is also coming out of the Xfinity Series. BJ McLeod Motorsports announced yesterday that Stefan Parsons is going to be competing full-time next year with a primary sponsor of Sokol Digital advertising on board for the entire season, as well as Spring Gates Automotive Suspension. So good news for Stefan Parsons being able to compete full-time next season for BJ McLeod.
I just saw that and put it up in our Hot Topics if we get to that one as well. You're right. Some good news coming out from BJ McLeod Motorsports as well as for driver Stefan Parsons.
Yes. It'll be his fourth straight year running for BJ McLeod, but it was under a part-time basis. So this will be the first season that he'll be racing full-time. So definitely happy for Stefan Parsons and looking forward to watching him race next season. You mentioned it earlier that Josh Berry is going to be replacing Michael Annette, who's still recovering from his injury at Las Vegas.
Yeah, we've seen that for several weeks. I know Michael Annette has tried to come back maybe a little earlier. I think one of the reports I heard was that he re-aggravated it training and lifting weights and getting back in shape, that he re-aggravated his leg injury. So you mentioned wish him the best of luck in his recovery here for towards the end of the season.
And some big news coming out this week, too. Last week, Nutrien AG Solutions is not sponsoring College Racing in 2022. That was kind of big news because they've been a huge sponsor. It's their third season of sponsorship and they funded 19 Xfinity Series races for Jeff Burton last year. So if that sponsorship isn't replacing, they may be dropping one of their three Xfinity Series programs because they're moving a pair of teams up to the Cup Series next season.
Yeah, I know we didn't get to that on Hot Topics on Monday. We'll have to see if we get to it. But you're right, it does play a major impact on that. And we don't know what College's intent was with the three Xfinity Series teams. We know they are planning on moving up to Cup with one full-time for sure. They do have two charters. So I have to see how that all plays out and what comes out of that.
Now, Jeff Burton, who drove that number 10 this year with Nutrien as his sponsor, scored his first career victory with an Xfinity win at Talladega earlier this year. So that could also have a role. They're saying he could still have a role in a redefined at College. If he's not retained in the Xfinity Series, he could have a shot at driving the second Cup car at College and will field as a trophy hunter driven by specialists. So we'll have to look and see if he'll help them win an owner's championship or work toward an owner's role in that championship run next season in the Cup Series.
Well, and I like what you said there, that College Racing likes to use that trophy hunting. That's for sure.
Yes, they do. So just some news here in the Xfinity Series. Any other news you think that is noteworthy for us to mention here?
No, I think we covered the Xfinity Series pretty well here. We'll see how this first round over the next couple of weeks. We're going to have lots of things going on with this being their round one for their playoffs.
Yes, indeed. Next up, we'll go to the Cup Series. They're racing again this weekend, of course. The South Point 400 will take place on Sunday, September the 26th, at Las Vegas. TV coverage will be on NBC Sports Network with radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM National Radio. And I'm not sure why, but they don't give me the breakdown for the stage breaks. So we'll have to see if that comes up a little bit later. Based on qualifying metrics, the lineup has been set, and Kyle Larson will start for the South Point 400 NASCAR Cup Series race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Ryan Blaney will join him on the front row in the number 12, followed by William Byron, Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin, Alex Bowman, Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano, and Kyle Busch to round out the top 10 drivers. We'll cover the rest of the lineup here, starting from the bottom up.
I will start at the bottom as soon as my lineup loads here. Here we go. Looks like we got 38 starters. The 38th spot will be the 66 Fat Boy Ice Cream Toyota of J.J. Yaley to his inside. That'll be the 15 of Joey Gase in the NV Donate Life Chevrolet.
Okay, a couple of Chevrolets here in row 18, starting with Quinn Huff behind the wheel of the 00 Eagle Rock Reef Chevrolet. And Cody Ware driving the number 51 Nurtec ODT Chevrolet.
We talked about BJ McLeod. He's driving his own team on the Cup Series, the number 78 International Materials Ford, starting 34th. And then 33rd will be the 77 Justin Haley Nations Guard Chevrolet.
Row 16 on the outside in 32nd place is Anthony Alfredo, one of the two rookies of the race. He'll be driving behind the wheel of the number 38 Dockside Logistics Ford. And driving another Ford is Josh Balicki behind the wheel of the number 52 Keep It Secure Ford.
Garrett Smithley in the number 53 Redline Chevrolet starts 30th, and after a rough week at Bristol, the 29th spot, that's Ryan Newman in the number 6 Guaranteed Rate Ford.
Row 14, starting on the outside, is Cole Custer driving the number 41 Dixie Vodka Greyhound Cocktail Ford. Try saying that five times real fast. In the number 7 is Corey LaJoy behind the wheel of the Built Bar Chevrolet.
Next row up, there you find the 99 Chevrolet of Daniel Suarez and the number 17 Ford of Chris Buescher.
Row 12, starting on the outside in the number 37, is Ryan Priest driving the Naturalite Vodka Chevrolet. And Michael McDowell is in the number 34 CarParts.com Ford.
Row number 11, we got the 47 Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in the Kroger Healthy Choice Chevrolet and the Dr. Pepper Toyota of the 23 Bubba Wallace.
Okay, row 10, these are your top 10 drivers. No, it's not your top 10 drivers. I'm sorry. Starting in 20th position, driving the number one is driving his number one Chevrolet. Had some bad luck last week. Just the car was not built for that track for whatever reason. So hopefully he'll have a better race this weekend. In the number 14 is the other rookie, Chase Briscoe, driving the One Cure Ford, number 14.
Teammate to Kurt Busch starts on the outside of row 18. That's Ross Chastain in the number 42 Clover Chevrolet. And then we find the Mobile One Ford, number 10 of Eric Almirola in the 17th spot.
In row 8, starting in 16th place on the outside, is Eric Jones driving the number 43 Medallion Bank Chevrolet. And Austin Hill on the inside, in his number 3 Bet MGM Chevrolet.
The number 21 Wood Brother Machine starts 14th. Matt DiBenedetto behind the wheel of the Suicide Prevention Lifeline Ford. And Tyler Reddick in the number 8, sponsored this week by Cat Trial 11, a Hot Wheels Chevrolet.
Row 6, starting on the outside in 12th spot, is Christopher Bell driving the number 20 SiriusXM Toyota, and Chase Elliott on the inside will be driving the number 9 Napa Auto Parts Chevrolet. Both of them playoff drivers.
And this is where we get into the top 10, the rest of the playoff drivers. M&M's FLM Toyota, that's Kyle Busch, and the 22 Pennzoil Ford is Joey Logano.
Side and the number 2 is Brad Keselowski in his Ford, and in the inside driving the number 48 is Alex Bowman's Ally Chevrolet.
The number 11 FedEx Office Toyota, now a championship contender, that's the 11 of Denny Hamlin. And last week's pit road involvement there, the number 4 Subway Delivery Ford, that'll be Kevin Harvick.
Row number 2 are two playoff drivers. Martin Truex Jr. behind the wheel of the number 19 Bass Pro Shops Toyota, and William Byron driving the number 24 Exalta Chevrolet.
Your front row, that's going to be the second starting spot outside that first row. The number 12 Ford, Penske Ford of Ryan Blaney. And back on the winning streak, the number 5, Carlton & Son Chevrolet. That'll be Hendrick Motorsports driver Kyle Larson.
All right, and the rec track record that they're all going to try to beat this weekend, dating back to March of 2019 and held by Joey Logano. He had a time of 2 hours, 35 minutes, and 11 seconds with a speed of 154.849 miles per hour. So there you have it. The starting lineup for the Las Vegas Motor Speedway's fourth annual South Point 400. Okay, let's cover
All right, we mentioned that was the cutoff race at Bristol, starting round number 2 at Las Vegas. Reset the points, picking up yet another victory, adding playoff points. Kyle Larson going to start at 3,059 points. Second place, Martin Truex, already 30 points behind to start this round at 3,029. Then Denny Hamlin's at 3,024, along with Ryan Blaney. Tiebreaker goes to Denny Hamlin. We'll see if that changes throughout this round. Fifth spot, there you got Kyle Busch at 3,022. Chase Elliott is at 3,021. Seventh spot, there we find Bowman the Showman. Alex Bowman starts at 3,015. William Byron at 3,014. Another 1 point gap. Another point back is Joey Logano at 3,013. 10th is Keselowski, Brad Keselowski at 3,008, Christopher Bell at 3,005, and Kevin Harvick at 3,002. So from top to bottom there, Kevin Harvick's looking at a 57-point deficit, but what he's really looking at is the cut line, and that would be the eighth spot, which would be William Byron at 3,014. He's only 12 behind that. So he's got to look first at 12 points, making up to get above that cut line, and then looking at the overall of being at 57 points behind Larson.
Yeah, Kevin Harvick, you know, the only driver of the 12 playoff drivers without a win yet this season. I don't think anybody would have predicted that coming into the year, considering he had, 9 wins last year? So a big surprise there with Kevin Harvick, but it's not going to surprise me if he wins this weekend at Las Vegas, one of the 1.5 mile tracks. Now keep in mind too, in this playoff round to 12, their tracks are exactly the same as the Xfinity series. They're going to start off here at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. They'll be racing 400.5 miles over 267 laps. Then they, October 3rd, they'll be racing at Talladega Super Speedway. And on October the 10th, their cutoff race will be at Charlotte Motor Course, the Bank of America Roval 400.
Again, I don't know that you could have a much more exciting round. You get the standard 1.5 mile, and I say standard with a tongue-in-cheek, but typical mile and a half speedway to get them set. Then we go to Talladega, wild card. Anything can happen. Some guy's going to be in some precarious positions going into the Charlotte Roval. Going to be a real interesting round here.
It is, because Talladega can either hurt you really bad or make you shine really bright. So we'll have to see what happens in all three of these races. I think a lot of these drivers want to get that victory in before they get to Talladega.
Or as well as the Charlotte Roval, if that's not their track of choice, you're right. That's why this Las Vegas race, I think, could be not maybe as wild, but some bolder moves we might see at Las Vegas to try and get that victory so they don't have to worry about Talladega or the Roval.
Yes, indeed. I'm definitely, this is some of my part of the year. I like racing all year long, don't get me wrong. But my favorite time of the year is, of course, the playoffs, because there's so many things that can happen. It's kind of like the agony, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, dating myself a little bit there. But that's exactly what happens during these playoffs. You know, a lot of drivers' hopes are dashed during these playoffs. And a lot of these other drivers have an opportunity to really shine during these playoffs. So it's where the cream really rises to the top.
It is. And I mentioned this in the other series. Not that we can't see it at Talladega in the Cup Series, but there are so many of the playoff drivers already having victories. To see it at the Cup level, a non-playoff driver pick up the victory, going to be a little bit more challenging, but we saw it really close at Daytona. So we'll have to see how Talladega does play into this round.
Yes, indeed. I'm looking at the most recent winner at Las Vegas. Fourth race. Let me just see here if I can get that. I thought I had it, and it turned out that it wasn't what I thought it was. The 2020 top 12. Oh, let's look at the driver rating at Las Vegas. Do I have that? It looks like Kyle Busch has the highest driver rating. No, it's actually Kevin Harvick has the highest driver rating at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, followed by Kyle Busch. No, I got to take it back. Joey Logano has the highest driver rating at Las Vegas. His driver rating is 103.7 at that track. 16 starts. He's got one pole award there, two wins, and six top fives, along with 11 top 10s. Kevin Harvick has a driver rating of 102.9, 24 starts, one pole, two wins, seven top fives, 12 top 10s, but he also has a couple of DNFs at that track. So it could go either way for him. Kyle Busch, the only other driver over 100, he's at a 100.2. In 20 starts, he's got the two poles, one win, eight top fives, and 11 top tens. He, too, also has two DNFs. So I don't know. Who do you pick for this weekend?
Well, that, like I said, the more I think about this, I kind of had some picks in mind already. But I do think there's different storylines that we've seen develop. Kevin Harvick, you want to talk about being motivated, and I don't know what it takes, like you said, to motivate Kevin Harvick more than usual, but we saw him fired up at Bristol. You see the intensity still quite alive in Kevin Harvick. I know you mentioned it all year long. We might see him really come out the gate and explode in the playoffs. That might be a spot to capitalize.
Yes, indeed. Now, in 2020, the playoff race winner, by the way, was Kurt Busch driving his Chevrolet, and that was on September 27th last year. So I believe he is the defending winner of this race.
Well, I will tell you this. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, since you asked me, I'd ask you. You already made your pick. I was looking at our fantasy picks. I knew we only had a few of them in, but you picked Kyle Busch. Sam took Martin Truex. Tommy had first pick, went with the clear favorite of Kyle Larson. I don't know why you wouldn't take him if you have first pick. And then Andy took Chase Briscoe because Andy takes Chase Briscoe.
Right. But nobody's taken Joey Logano, who has the highest average – the highest driver rating at that track with no DNFs. I did take Kyle Busch. I knew he had a pretty good driving record at that track. But nobody's taken Harvick yet either, who also has a high driver rating, at that track. So it'll be interesting to see if anybody else picks those drivers.
Well, James, I'm waiting to hear from James. He has the next pick before I can go, and then Owen and Mike. So I got a little bit of an advantage doing the preview show here with you, Sharon, over Mike and Owen. And again, they got the last spots as they did better last week. So it allows us to try and make up some points by having the first better pick before them.
Well, and I've already given my pick, but I think I've got a good one. We'll see what happens. I think Kyle's going to look to rebound from last week. And, again, I think he wants to get that win before Talladega and the road course. So we'll see what happens. But do you want to go ahead and give the update for our fantasy group as we transition here before we get into hot topics?
All right, I can do that. I know, and actually I did have to do a little bit of editing. Mike, being the stand-up guy that he is, I will say that here and now because he's not on here to hear me say it. But I did have his Xfinity pick scored wrong from previous. He had changed from Josh Berry or from Austin Cindric to Josh Berry, and I actually gave him credit for Austin Cindric's finish. So he pointed that out.
Wow.
We got that all straight. So appreciate that, Mike. He does lead the truck series. He's got 87 points. I'm at 83. Sharon's at 82. 77 for Andy. 74 for Sam. Owen at 67. Tommy, 66. And James, 52. Sliding over to the Xfinity series. There I have the lead at 108 to 102. Andy's at second to me. Mike is at 95. Thought him and Andy were closer, but Mike dropped back to 95 with that correction. Sam at 91. James, 89. Sharon, 87. Owen and Tommy, 81.
The Xfinity Series has been my Achilles heel this year.
Yeah, well, and that one, let's see, top to bottom there is 27 points. The Truck Series was 35, and then I think that with the exception of Andy in the Cup Series, those are the two tighter ones. Here on the Cup side, I got a total of 157. Owen's at 147, Sam 146, Mike 144, Sharon 141. Top five, they're extremely tight, 16 points, which is one playoff race. Then you got James at 115, Tommy at 105, Andy, again, been sticking with Chase Briscoe at 70. Nobody mathematically eliminated, though, as of yet. And now let me see. I redid the overall as well. Again, nobody's been eliminated yet. I'm at 335. Mike's at 322. Sam, 307. Sharon at 304. Owen at 303. James at 269. Andy 255 and Tommy 252, and I believe there's a 200-point availability yet, 288 points yet available in all the series. So our overall, Tommy could get up as high as 520 some points. So nothing locked down yet.
Exactly. So we have had a lot of fun doing that this year and previous years for that matter. And Jay, we thank you for bringing up the idea and being kind of the host of all of that by keeping track of everybody's score. And you do such a fantastic job with it. We really, really appreciate it.
Well, and like you said, definitely enjoyable. I know you said it. It adds a little bit more to that race. You got your list of drivers and who you're looking at as far as who's competing against who.
Yes, every week. Ask my brother. He's usually with me when I watch these races. And he usually picks as well. I don't know. Maybe we'll include him in the points next year. But, you know, I've got him too. And he's got the advantage of being able to pick anybody he wants. He's not limited by, you know, previous picks that eliminate some of your picks. So maybe I'll put him in the mix next year.
We would certainly love to have him. I know I do several different ones. I do them a lot of different ways. The one I do with my family, there it you get two drivers. But you can't pick the drivers you picked the week before. That's our limitation. You can't pick the same driver 2 weeks in a row. It doesn't matter who anybody else picks. You just can't pick the same two the same week, 2 weeks in a row.
Well, that makes it interesting as well. Okay, and I've seen others where you pick a team for the season. Is that the way it goes? You pick a team and you see how your team does? Is that the way NASCAR does it?
Yeah, that's a typical NASCAR one. Some of them are based on points values. Some of them are, I think they went to where they're, again, for the whole year, you can each pick only each driver only 10 times. And then you also have your garage driver each week in case through the first two rounds somebody has a bad race, you pull somebody out of your garage, put them in your lineup, pull somebody out. Is another very unique situation they implemented in the past couple of years.
Interesting. Okay. So I think we keep it pretty simple, that works for us.
I was going to say, you know, that is very interesting, but they have a website that does it. If I'm the one doing this, we're not doing that because that does take a lot of work, let me tell you.
Yes, indeed. Started.
Did we pick up Andy yet?
Here yet. So I'm hoping, he's on the East Coast, so it shouldn't be too confusing for him. So I had him on my list to start us off for Hot Topics. But since he's not here yet, Jay, let's go ahead and have you kick us off with the first Hot Topic. Let me see if I have any news from Andy.
I was going to say, last I saw, I thought he said he was going to be here this morning.
Yeah, and I don't have any notes from him, so we're still expecting him to show up. But go ahead and kick us off, Jay.
Well, Juan, I don't know that we can discuss a whole lot. I know you put up this morning, and I hadn't noticed it either, but David Gillen received a one-race suspension probation for violation of ARCA member conduct per the ARCA rule book, something that happened post-race at Bristol. The only other thing I saw was it was for actions on pit road, and I didn't know if you had any more you could add to that first off.
You know, I went back and watched the highlights. There was no mention of it. I don't remember any mention of it when I was watching the race, so I have no idea what happened. He's going to be suspended for one race, and he's also placed on probation for the remainder of the 2021 season for that violation, 12-8.1, which references ARCA member conduct guidelines. So I'd be curious to know what happened, and I didn't get a chance to check to see if there was any mention of it on Twitter. But I haven't heard a thing about it.
And I'm in that same boat. When you mentioned it, I was pulling up the ARCA Menards homepage. I know that's where it had that article listed, and that's where I say I did pick up. It was some type of action on pit road. As a team owner, I know, Chip Ganassi, I believe, ended up with one for COVID protocol as he had more guests in the VIP lounge or in the pit area. Than he was supposed to. So I don't know if it was that related or if it was being involved in a scuffle or something where he shouldn't have been. It's unfortunate. David Gillen, we've seen building a great program with Ford and the developmental program throughout the truck series as well as ARCA Menards series. So hopefully this doesn't become an issue. And it was kind of surprising to me. We've all seen anybody can lose their temper at any time, but you don't hear that about very often. I'll tell you that.
The only thing I've seen here shown in the video is reasoning for his penalties. Okay, ARCA has confirmed to me that the post-race scuffle following Thursday's Busch Beans 200 at Bristol, shown in RL Racing 2's video, is the reasoning for David Gilliland's, I see a video now, NASCAR man. There were some punches that were thrown on pit road after the ARCA race last Thursday. And that's why David Gilliland, let me see, I will repost this video on my timeline so people can see what it is I'm talking about. Retweet. I'm not going to. Okay. I just retweeted a post that I saw here, and I've got 12 notifications. My goodness.
Well, I'll pull that up there. Okay. See if we can pick David Gillen out of that. And I say that kind of led me to believe that there had to be something something between his driver that he was involved in. We've seen crew chiefs before in the past be involved in that. Normally not an owner. I know Richard Childress, there's jokes made about him when he takes his wristwatch off that Childress can throw down if he has to.
Yeah, I think it's Drew Dollar in the number 15, is it not, Jay? I'm pretty sure Drew Dollar drives that number 15, and I think there was an on-track incident between Drew Dollar and Taylor Gray. So I think this might be.
Well, and that would have been at Taylor Gray being his young driver for David Gilliland Racing that we talked so much about, the one involved in it there. So I understand standing up for your driver, but that's one of those where the driver kind of has to learn to develop that themselves. And an example of how to handle it, we've talked about Noah Gregson as one that maybe has recently learned how to better handle himself. And I just think like Coach Gibbs. I mean, Coach Gibbs has been frustrated in the past. You don't see that from him. I put David Gillen more towards that end. I really don't see that even as a former driver. See that out of him very often.
Five. It's definitely somebody with Venturini Motorsports. I'm not sure if it's the number 15 or the number 55. The 15, by the way, is driven by Drew Dollar, and the number 55 by Parker Chase. So I'm not sure which car. Those cars were lined up next to each other. This video that we're watching that I posted on Twitter it shows both of those cars. So again, we're trying to piece this together ourselves, but apparently there were some punches thrown, atypical of David Gilliland. He is typically a very cool, calm, and collected guy, so you don't expect to see that from him. But again, I think that it's just one of those things that happen sometimes. Our passions get the best of us. This is an emotional sport, and sometimes our passions do get the best of us.
I don't think we'll see an issue with it as far as him being on probation or anything long-term down the future. Like I said, I just really surprised by it to begin with. Understand, give it the credit or benefit of the doubt, just lost his cool for a moment, and we don't know what was said or what provoked it, so we'll have to look at his track record.
Let me see if Andy knows anything about this. Andy, all first
right.
of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sharon. Hi, Jay. How you both doing today?
We're doing great. We're talking
good.
To Andy about something that came up on ARCA Menard saying that David Gilliland was fined for violating member conduct on pit road after Bristol Motor Speedway. I posted a video that I found on Twitter showing an altercation, and we're not sure if it's with him and the 55 or if it involves the 15. But we're wondering, do you know anything about this?
I don't actually. I did see the news about it, and I can only understand that it was probably from frustrations after the Bristol race, but I don't know any details about it. But to your point, Sharon, you know, not something you would typically see from David Gilliland, but obviously as a team owner, if he felt that one of his drivers or teams had been wronged, you know, that's when the emotions come out, and especially at a short track like Bristol. So, you know,
Andy,
kind of
we
an uncharacteristic...
missed part of your conversation there. You kind of zoned out, or your audio cut out for part of.
Can
you thought
okay
it might
now?
Be. Yeah, we do now, but you said it might be surrounding something, and then that's when you cut out.
Oh, it just might be surrounding the fact that, you know, David felt like one of his teams had been wronged on the track, and I don't even know what the incident was. I didn't actually see that race. But obviously frustrations can run high, especially right after an event, and obviously David was frustrated about something. But, yeah, certainly not something you see every day, that's for sure.
Okay. And as I mentioned, I do have a video up on my timeline, Fanfare Racing site on Twitter. If you want to take a look at that video, we'll let you guys come to your own conclusion of what you think happened there. Jay, did you have anything more that you wanted to say about that?
No, again, just so unexpected. Again, Bristol, a short track, being one of those where tempers do flare. To see it from an owner, especially one like David Gillen, kind of surprising. But if you've been around racing, you know that everybody hits that certain point. And not knowing what brought it out on the track or post-race, really don't want to comment any further on it.
Correct, because we are just, I want to make sure that that is clear. We're not sure what happened there either. We just know that there's a video that's been posted, and again, I have it in my timeline if folks want to take a look at that at fanfarracing.com, fanfarracing site on Twitter. But Andy, let's go to you to bring up the next topic that we're going to discuss here.
Yeah, talking about the possibility for streaming services in NASCAR to become more prevalent years down the road. It doesn't sound like it'll be anything imminent. The next TV deal, I believe, would be 2025, but kind of curious what your thoughts are to see NASCAR racing possibly make somewhat of a shift away from the standard cable TV package to possibly a more streaming service.
Yeah, I think it's 2025 before they think any of that's going to come into effect. So this is certainly down the road. But Jay, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I know we've kind of had this discussion before. I am not a big fan of it. If there is one or two, five races that do end up on a streaming platform, I don't know. I may end up missing those races because that's not my particular medium, preferred medium of watching a race. So we'll have to wait and see. I know they're looking at it being how do you reach the maximum amount of audience, as well as then, to me, I'm not sure where the revenue comes from. Then we know where the revenue on TV comes from. Where does the revenue come from other than the paying for the app or site, whatever you want to call it, in order to stream it, if that's enough to generate what we get from the television contract. So that's where I don't understand it. Excuse me. And I don't think Mike chimed in it on this time. I know he has in the past, though, that he said that he was one that would absolutely go away from even watching races. I don't know that he'd hold true to that, but that was his statement at the time.
Yeah. I think that Brian Herbst, who, by the way, happens to be the Senior Vice President of Media and Productions at NASCAR, said that there will be some streaming element when the new rights deal comes into effect in 2025. That being said, potential fears about moving everything to a service like Peacock might be unnecessary. I think he's thinking about this as a third bucket. He said, think about Peacock, ESPN Plus, Paramount Plus under the CBS side, obviously Amazon Prime as well. It's a third bucket to help underwrite the investment by networks in some of these big sports deals. So I think he's looking at this as kind of a supplement to broadcast TV that they might reach a broader audience with some streaming servicing also available. So I don't really have a problem with it. I think they're looking at this as an enhancement, not a go-to for everything, but as an enhancement to what they're already offering. So to me, I think it sounds like it's smart idea, a way to kind of expand the audience for NASCAR and allowing people to stream it if that's the way that they like to do TV. I know a lot of people are ending their cable network and looking at streaming apps and just having the internet available for them to stream their TV versus having cable. So that is a trend that is developing, and I think that NASCAR is looking at being on top of that trend. Andy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is just a sign of the times, right? I think that streaming
yes.
apps and services are becoming more prevalent, and I think it's just part of, you know, the way we'll see things go. That being said, I think NASCAR still reaches such a broad audience that they really can't afford to put it exclusively on streaming services, even as part of a new deal, you know, 4 years down the road. I think that, you know, and I think even I'd have to look at the numbers in front of me, but I think Brian Herbst even mentioned in his in that press release that the cable audience is far broader than what they would reach on streaming services. So they know that they still have to have a presence on regular TV and probably even on your regular Fox and NBC or perhaps a new network if a new network comes as part of the TV package renewal in 2025. But, yeah, I think that you might see some practice in qualifying, maybe the occasional truck or Xfinity race on a streaming service, but it sounds like it'll predominantly still be TV, and it should be. I think the majority of people in the United States still have regular or cable TV, and even though, like you said, Sharon, people are more and more gravitating towards streaming services, I don't think it's intended to fully replace regular TV, so probably not something to get too stressed out about, but you know, years and years down the road, it probably will trend that way towards streaming services. But it's I just think that there's too big of a presence with normal TV that it's not going to go away from that anytime soon. But with that all being said, you know, whatever entity the race is on, if it's a streaming app or cable or regular TV, like as a race fan, you find ways to watch these races if you want to watch bad enough.
Absolutely. Jake, any other thoughts on your end?
Here's where my issue comes in with it. And I know if we take Peacock, for example, they do have the wider range. But if you get to, you have to pay-per-view or to pay for a streaming app to watch NASCAR races. You have to pay for an individual to watch basketball, the NBA, or the NFL. Of now, how much are you adding up to watch each of these individual ones? And I say, I know the reason I can say that Peacock, I know, is a wider range, is that is where WWE Wrestling sold out their streaming platform to. So they offer the variety of TV shows as well as then sports entertainment for the WWE. If they have a combo package like that, it is something I would consider because there's multiple that I want to watch. Like I said, if I got to pay for NFL games on an app in order to watch them, and then the racing, and then NBA or whatever else I choose, you're starting to add up, you know, $10, $15, whatever it be, gets to be the same as a cable bill, which is that was the intent of cable. So the as Andy said it, if it's supplemental, yeah, it'd be my choice. If I want to watch qualifying and I have to have it to watch qualifying or something, one-time deal. Like I said, I'm not going to go away and quit watching racing or lose interest in racing. I may not get to see as much of it live. I have Sirius XM that I listen to a lot anyway, being that, you know, I spend a lot of time in my vehicle and on the road. So for me, the radio is actually a more viable option.
Okay. Well, here's what I think it is, Jay. I think that what's happening and what I've seen happening is that people are dropping their cable bill, but they're picking up their TV coverage through like Hulu's TV streaming services, which would include NBC Sports Network, Fox Sports, CBS, you know, all the major networks. And people would be able to watch all their football, all their all the sports that they currently watch on cable now, they'd be able to watch through Hulu, let's say, Hulu TV, or YouTube TV, or Sling TV, or, you know, what other services are out there that are providing the same patients that we get on a cable network or cable service, you would now get through that streaming service in any one of those providers. So it's not that you'd have a separate app for each sport, but you would have a different streaming service providing that same coverage. So that's what I think NASCAR is looking at. If they're providing it only on cable, and not on the streaming part side of it, then they would miss people. So by making that transition to the streaming service, they're allowing those users that have dropped the cable or dropped the, top of the house for the
satellite,
the satellite or whatever, or the antenna. If they drop their antenna TV, then these guys aren't going to be able to watch the race. So because they've got the streaming service instead of those other providers. So NASCAR's got to take a look at that and offer the streaming service so that everybody can still be included. The numbers that they give here is the broadcast TV penetration is 120 to 125 million homes. Cable TV is another 75 million, and the direct-to-consumer platforms right now are in the 15 million range. So we're going to see a shift in that over time because it's already started and more people are dropping the cable and the antenna TV and they're moving over to these streaming services through their internet provider. So, and there's a lot of internet providers that are out there offering live TV through their service. And I mentioned just a few with Hulu, Sling TV, YouTube has a TV offering now. So, and it is a little bit more cost effective for people. So just something to kind of keep in mind when you're looking at this. I don't think they're looking at discontinuing the TV. They're just recognizing that people are shifting to the streaming services. Andy, any follow-up on your end?
Not particularly, though. I think that it's just a way of the future, really. And I did want to touch on the streaming services that you're talking about. That's really just another provider for a lot of the existing channels. Like, for example, I have cable myself, but I was actually visiting my parents this past weekend, and I was watching the race on NBC Sports Network, but it was via Sling, which is a streaming service that provides all these cable channels via the internet, basically. I don't know if they're talking more specifically about that or they're talking about some of these broadcasts, whether it be practice qualifying or a race, being put specifically on a streaming network, and that would be like Paramount Plus or Peacock, which is connected to NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Those are specifically streaming streaming entities, so I don't quite know if they're talking about, you know, the streaming provider, because a streaming provider will still provide you the same channels that you'd get on cable.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no change there. But some of these apps are streaming networks are specific, I think, to just streaming. So I'm not sure if that's what they meant or if they meant the streaming services. But nonetheless, I would say that you're right in thinking that, you know, more and more people are definitely trending that way, and I think that within probably 10 years, everything's going to be streaming for the most part. It's just the way it is. Things change, and we just have to adapt to these changes, and I don't care as long as I can still watch racing. So we'll just have
yeah,
to make it
easier. I think Brian Earp said it. It's a third bucket by offering it on Peacock, ESPN, and Paramount, because there are those people out there that don't have the streaming TV streaming service. They don't have cable. They don't have the TV streaming. And those apps that we're talking about are a third bucket for NASCAR to dip into to expand their audience, because I think the younger generation, they're into all these different apps and everything, and it's a third bucket that NASCAR is exploring. And again, this is down the road. So let's go ahead and move on to our next hot topic. Jay, what do you have for us?
Well, I put this one up the other day. I know we didn't get to it. Heard a lot of talk as far as Kevin Harvick, but at Stuart Haas Racing, Rodney Childress signed an extension, and I believe it just says multiple years or years down the road that he's going to be with Stuart Haas Racing.
Okay, Andy?
I'm not surprised. I feel like Rodney is probably one of their bigger assets at SHR, certainly a championship winning and a top crew chief in the garage. If you're that organization, you're going to want to retain somebody like that. Whether Harvick retires sooner than later, I think Rodney will probably still be there into the future. So certainly a good move for Stuart Haas to retain one of its top employees.
Okay, and I would agree with Andy. I think I'm not surprised either. I think Rodney has been a huge asset for Stuart Haas Racing, and will continue, obviously, with the re-signing of his contract for multiple years as an asset for Stuart Haas Racing. I see Stuart Haas as a rebuilding. They're in a rebuilding mode here. Harvick, obviously, but we don't know what the future holds with Kevin Harvick. But then you've got Chase Briscoe and Eric Almirola and Cole Custer there as well, with Eric Almirola the most senior of those three. So, and the Riley Herbst is right now in the Okay, I am here, and I want to make a quick announcement. We're going to go off the air at 11 a.m., or I'm sorry, 12 noon Eastern time, but we will continue to record the rest of our conversation, and you'll be able to get that via my Twitter feed. Just fast forward to the two-hour mark when I post the podcast so you can hear the rest of the conversation. So I think we just went off the air. I got cut off. Jay got cut off. Andy, are you still here?
So I'm still here, but it went silent for a while, for about a minute or so. I'm not quite sure what happened there, but I am still here.
Yeah, both Andy and I, or both Jay and I got cut off. I believe we're all back on now. Jay, are you here?
Yeah, I when it went silent, I was seeing if it was my phone. I wasn't watching the time, so I cut myself off and called back in, fortunately, in time. So I think we're good to go again.
I think we're good to go, and boy, did we make it just under the wire, Jay.
yeah,
okay.
That's why I said I wasn't watching the time that close.
Yeah, I wasn't either, and we both got cut off. And I didn't know if I was going to make it back in time, but we made it back just in time. Okay, so I forget now. I think I was – did you guys hear what I said, Andy?
I don't. As far as your response, no, I guess not.
Okay, so let me go ahead and say that. I think I got cut off while I was talking. What happened is I said that I think Rodney Childress is a great asset at Stuart Haas Racing. And I see Stuart Haas Racing as a team that's kind of building, if you will. I know that there's Kevin Harvick there, but we're not sure what Kevin Harvick's going to be doing beyond this year, if he's going to be returning or if he's going to be retiring. But I think retirement is in his future sooner rather than later. And then you've got Eric Almirola, the senior of the next three drivers, or the next two drivers, which is Cole Custer and Chase Briscoe. You've got Riley Herbst in the wings driving in the Xfinity Series, and I think it's possible, depending on what he does in the next year, that he could be coming up into Stewart Haas Racing. So I think Roger Childers is a great guy to help with that rebuilding of this next generation of drivers that are coming into Stewart Haas Racing. He's a veteran crew chief. He's done well with Kevin Harvick, kind of the leader there at Stewart Haas Racing. And so I think it's a good move for that organization. Jay, your comments?
Well, there's a couple things that come into play. We had heard the possibility of Kevin Harvick owning his own team. First off, you do have to look at, as a driver, you're right, his retirement as a driver is coming sooner rather than later. But if he were to move to recreate his own Cup team, we've seen him have the truck team in the past. If that were a possibility, we've seen it before, and I think it's happening with Brad Keselowski, of taking a crew chief with when you leave. So Stewart Haas securing Rodney Childress there at Stewart Haas Racing, a great move. Then you mentioned organization-wise, period. I don't know if they're necessarily in a full rebuilding mode, but they do have a lot of change over year to year when we talk about different drivers that have come up one at a time, Daniel Suarez, Ryan Newman, that have come for a year or two and then moved on to for that stability. I mean, that's one of the things I look at. And Rodney Childers is one that could be there long-term, not just as a crew chief, but then moving into the competition or roles like that that we've seen other organizations move top crew chiefs up like that. So I think it is a huge, huge plus for Stewart Haas. Lock him down and keep him within that organization, primarily just for stability.
Okay. Andy, your follow-up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's one of their strongest assets, like I said earlier. And I feel like, you know, he, you know, certainly is young enough to remain a crew chief for quite some time, even after Harvick retires. And there's no denying the success that he's had. So certainly, you know, any of those top crew chiefs, no matter which team they work for, as a team owner, you want to try to get them locked down. And you know, you bring up a good point of, you know, if Harvick decides to own his own team someday, you know, Rodney has an existing deal to remain in place where he's at now. So certainly a move that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, he certainly brings a lot to that team and will help get them back where they're used to running up front.
Okay. I think we've said a lot there. I don't really have anything to add. So, Jay, I'll go to you to wrap this topic up. Jay, did I lose you?
No, that time I was on mute. That may play a factor into how much longer Kevin Harvick stays at Stewart Haas and racing. We've seen that in the past. The other thing I look at, too, though, is whether or not we see a change. We talk about when a crew chief driver combination runs its course. And we mentioned it, 9 wins last year for Kevin Harvick and Rodney Childers, that team. We haven't seen that yet, but we have seen them back to the front, running up front, battling for the lead, as a matter of fact, at Bristol. So it'll be interesting to see with him re-signing, Kevin Harvick stays there. Maybe in these final years we see a swap up and Rodney Childers pairs up with Cole Custer, or you mentioned maybe even Riley Herbst if he were to move into the fold, or even Chase Briscoe.
Okay, we got a cutout here on Jay. I don't know if it's Jay or
no,
it's
me. I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we lost your audio there for a minute or two.
Okay, I wrapped up by saying that it'd be interesting to see if Childress stays with Harvick. I mean, that's a possibility that he maybe pairs up with another driver within the organization here in the future.
Yes, that will be interesting to see. Andy, do you have anything, any other topics that you want to bring up?
I'm going to defer at this point. Jay, do you have anything you got?
Well, we had had it released, I don't know when it actually came out. Sharon and I both noticed it about the same time this morning. Stephon Parsons going to go full-time Xfinity next year with BJ McLeod.
Okay, Andy, your thoughts about Stephon Parsons?
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent opportunity for him. I'm not sure that he's run a full season yet. So for him to get a full season's worth of experience in the Xfinity Series is a good thing. So it gets him more on-track time. It gets him the opportunity to learn these tracks better. And, you know, I'm sure that that team will put forth the best effort that it can. So a good opportunity for both BJ McLeod Motorsports and for Stephon Parsons.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think Stephon Parsons coming back into the with BJ McLeod and running a full season will be a great opportunity for him. I know BJ McLeod is looking at doing some things to kind of rebuild his organization to be a little bit stronger than it has been. So I think this will be a good opportunity for Stephon Parsons. Jay?
This is one I know, and I know Mike has some ties to McLeod. Talk about his Cup organization, not a top-tier organization, obviously. I think in the Xfinity Series, when we look at it, it's one of those that is on the very verge of possibly being put together a solid multi-car team. And to get mm-hmm. that started, I think Stephon Parsons is one that I think is a good driver to start with, giving him that full-time ride. We've seen him in the limited starts throughout years. I think you mentioned since 2018, to have him as a full-time driver, that continuity and stability, and see where that takes him to be able to step up to that next level. I'd say maybe a mid-pack to top 10, maybe not yet a winning a race team or a championship contending team, but you got to take it step by step. And I think this is a good step in that direction of becoming a top 10 team, top 10, top 15 driver at the minimum.
Okay. Any follow-up, Andy?
I don't, none at this time.
Yeah, me either. So, Jay, unless you have something more to say, I do want to bring up, do you have anything more you want to say, Jay?
No, not on that. Like I said, we'll have to see how that team, I know you mentioned that McLeod has some things in the works to establish that, and I think right now the Xfinity Series, we've talked about a couple of teams that may be moving on, and shutting down or minimizing Joe Gibbs Racing, Colleague Racing. I think this is their mm-hmm. opportunity to start getting in there and mixing it up with those top teams then.
Yes, indeed. Now, I want to bring up, because we talked about this on Monday night, and I want to give Andy an opportunity to kind of chime in on this. And that is when you look at what happened in the Truck Series with Chandler Smith coming from 10th and winning that race. And then in the Cup Series, a couple of drivers that we thought would move on to the round of eight that did not move on to the round of eight. Looking at the Cup Series specifically, who do you think are going to be we lost four drivers. Who are going to be the next four drivers that don't make it into the next round?
I believe I was on Monday because we had this discussion with Mike and Jay.
You were on Monday. I was thinking you weren't.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay.
My apologies.
But it was a good discussion.
I don't know
why
I was. It was a good discussion. Okay, I just was thinking we didn't have your thoughts on that, but we did get your thoughts on that, so I guess we'll move on to something else. Jay, do you have anything else?
Well, what we talked about was the Cup Series, and then with the Truck Series, the Xfinity Series had just set there, so we could talk about that as far as the Xfinity Series.
Okay, let's talk about the Xfinity Series then, Andy. What do you think is going to happen there in the Xfinity Series in this next round? I think the Xfinity Series has Las Vegas, Talladega, and then the Charlotte Road Course will be their elimination race. Your thoughts about who's going to survive that?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but I think that, unfortunately, it's pretty obvious to me, unless things drastically change, how that's going to go as far as the guys at the back part of the playoffs. It really comes down to performance, and I know that things can change, but if you look at, you know, the overall performance of, you know, unfortunately for Jeremy Clements in 12th, you know, a great racer that really gets a lot out of his equipment, that's a family-owned team and quite frankly probably overachieves with being in an underfunded car, you know, going up against top organizations and beating out some of them for a playoff berth is pretty impressive. But unless something freak happens, the odds of them going to the next round really is going to be pretty difficult. Riley Herbst, I mean, what can you say about him? I mean, this is the team that went to the Final Four and won 9 races last year, and they have been extremely far off that mark this year. Unless something changes with that team, I don't see them going on to the next round. They just have not performed this year. Brandon Jones, kind of in the same boat as Herbst. I mean, they're in top-level cars and just have not had a very good year. And unless things change, probably not going to move on. And Myatt Snyder, you know, did win Homestead this year, and that's how they got into the playoffs. But the performance has been kind of tough. So those four in the back four positions, I feel like unless things drastically change in the next 3 races, they're probably looking at a very early exit in the playoffs.
Okay. Yeah, I would have to agree with Andy. I do think that Riley Herbst has had some really good runs. I think he finished 3rd at Bristol, which was a really good run for him. I think he is finally starting to come around. It might be too late, if you will, in the season this year. I hope he gets another opportunity next season. We'll have to wait and see what happens there. But I will say I've seen some glimmers there for Riley Herbst. Brandon Jones, yeah, I'm a little disappointed. I expected more out of Brandon Jones this season, and he just hasn't given us. I know the competition is pretty stiff. Jeremy Clements, I agree, he's an overachiever in his number, his car, and you know, I think he's at the top of where he's going to go in the series this year. And same with Myatt Snyder. Myatt Snyder does have a race win this year. That was great for him getting that race win, but he doesn't have any stage wins. And he's performed pretty much at the level that he's going to be able to perform at when you look at the other competition above him. I think the top 8 that we have now are going to be the top 8. So I'm not sure that these bottom 4 are going to make it to the next level. They might surprise us. Don't be surprised if Riley Herbst has another good run at Las Vegas. He's raced at that track a lot and comes from that area, if I recall correctly. So I'm not going to be surprised if Riley Herbst has another good run at Las Vegas, but I don't know that we're going to see it from him in the Talladega race or the road course race. So I think what it is now is pretty much what it's going to be moving forward. We might see some people at the bottom of the 8 have some good runs and maybe push themselves up a little bit further, like Noah Gregson's done, but we'll have to wait and see. Jay, your thoughts?
Well, you both kind of took that easy route of the bottom four for a reason, and you're right. I mean, that's a true statement. However, you look at Riley Herbst. I'm going to take Riley Herbst and Brandon Jones. Jeremy Clements, you mentioned it. Cell phone team, making the playoffs is great. That Talladega and the Roval, because he's good on road courses, although that one in particular, not your typical road course, and we've seen so many drivers that are so good on it, not as much faith as you would a regular road course that we've seen him win on in the past. You mentioned Myatt Snyder. Again, team got the victory. Good year for him. They made the playoffs.
I think he needs that second full-time season under his belt. Look for him to be better and improved next year. The two in the middle there, though, Brandon Jones and Riley Herbs. Riley, I say, is on the uptrend. We've seen his performance pick up in recent weeks. Sharon said it, maybe a little too late. And Brandon Jones is that inconsistent. He's had a couple of good weeks. He's had a couple of bad weeks. And when I look at the points, to Harrison Burton is 2008, it is only 5 and 7 points between them. So while I think those two seriously could move on and have some good runs, the good runs may not be good enough unless there's some bad runs by those in the top eight. And then Herps and Jones have to be there to capitalize on that and take advantage of it. I think that's where it's going to come into play. At this point in the season, good top 10 runs aren't going to get you into the top eight because your other drivers are already up there performing, winning, or have the stage playoff points built up already so that if they have a bad race, they got that cushion to fall back on. So it's going to be tough, but we saw it in the Truck Series. Both drivers from below the cut line raced their way in. We saw it in the Cup Series between two drivers that battled it out come down to 2 points. I think we could very well see that in the Xfinity Series, and my belief is it would come from Brandon Jones or Riley Herbs.
Okay. Andy, your thoughts? Follow up.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the playoffs, though, you know, to play devil's advocate to my own response earlier, is that things can change, and even though those bottom four teams are the most likely to be eliminated, you know, this is the time when teams step up and put in their, you know, put in that extra effort, if you will, and it is entirely possible that, you know, one of those teams can pull out a win, especially at Talladega, where anything can happen next week. So there's always that chance that somebody, you know, below the cut line presently makes that way in and wins their way to the next round. So, and we could also see teams that maybe are in that middle range, you know, that fourth to eighth area that maybe falter in performance, you know. So you just never really know what can happen. Vegas this weekend is fairly predictable, but the next 2 weeks, Talladega and the Charlotte Roval, not so much. So it's going to be interesting, certainly, to see how it all unfolds. But, you know, with there being essentially two wild card races in this round, you really don't quite know how it's going to go. So while we all think we know what's going to happen, certainly you could see some of these teams step up and make their way into that next round that we weren't expecting to.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think any of the three of us have a crystal ball to know exactly what's going to happen. But you are right. A lot of things could happen, especially at a track like Talladega. You know, Jeremy Clements could come up with a victory and earn his way into the next round. So a lot can happen here, and that's why we all tune in every week. So, you know, we hope nobody falters, but we've seen it happen. Look at what happened to Kurt Busch this last weekend in an elimination race at Bristol, and his car was just – there was nothing they could do to improve his car. So somehow they missed the setup big time, and it just ruined his any possibility of him making it into that next round. So you just never know what can happen. And although we don't want to see anybody falter, it's probably going to happen. Somebody's going to have something happen. They get caught up in a wreck at Talladega. You just don't know what can happen. So you're right. None of us have that crystal ball to know exactly what's going to happen. And we're just going to have to tune in to find out what does happen. But you're right. Jeb Burton and Harrison Burton are certainly vulnerable right now. They don't have very much of a cushion with 9 points between seventh place Jeb Burton and 12th place Jeremy Clements. That's a tight cushion. And I think we'll probably see that shift over these next three races. Jay?
Well, and when you look at it, I mentioned two that I thought could get in. The two I would have to pick as far as then possibly going out, minor, setting aside any catastrophic failure by any of the drivers, I just think consistently, Jeb Burton being one of them, we saw the victory. He's run good. Colic Racing, with the exception of A.J. Allmendinger, hasn't been strong as a solid three-car team. And I'd go as far up then. I'd skip over Harrison Burton. We know he's been a championship contender before, so I skip over him. And then I also skip over Daniel Hemric, who we've seen maybe not get the win, but still knocking down those top fives, top tens, top twos. I go up to Justin Haley. He's another one. But then you throw in Talladega, where we know he is a good restrictor player, super speedway racer. Mm-hmm. So those would be the two I would say are most concerning to me, not necessarily Harrison Burton because he's closer to the cut line, just of performance consistently throughout the year.
Did you have anything else, Jen?
No, that was all I had for today.
And I think we're ready to do our roundtable. Andy?
All right. Yeah, it's going to be CB14 fan on Twitter. And as always, glad to be on today's podcast edition of Fan for Racing. And certainly looking forward to all three series being out at Vegas this weekend.
Okay. Jay?
You follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. Probably going to be listening to a lot of the racing on the radio, as I mentioned. The weather permitting, we have added an additional date to Jackson Motor Speedway, your capital city raceway, to include modifieds yet again. So looking forward to that if the weather permits and we can get it in.
Okay. I assume you're going to be at a racetrack. I lost your sound there for a minute, but hopefully everybody else heard it. Okay, I am Fan for Racing Sites on Twitter, for Racing Blog and Radio, everywhere else, including fanforracing.com, where we post all of the recaps and our radio show broadcasts. I'll be putting up our podcast here for today's show momentarily, so fans can watch for that podcast coming up sometime early this afternoon. A big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. We do appreciate all of you. We will be back to our regular schedule on September the 30th for our preview show. We will also be back this coming Monday to review the races at Las Vegas. So look for us to be back to our regular schedule here for the Thursday night show next Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And thank you for bearing with us through these two podcasts that we did for the last 2 weeks. We do appreciate that. And a big shout out to our Fan for Racing crew here today, Andy Lasty. We're always happy to have you on the show. And Jay Huseman. We always appreciate both of your insights here on our Hot Topic segment and Jay for what you do with our fantasy group and as co-host of our Thursday night show. So thank you guys. I don't say it enough, and I just want to make sure that I tell you guys thank you. I think with that, I think we're ready to call it a day.
All right. Have a good one, folks. We'll see you soon.
Enjoy the race weekend.
Okay. Take care, everybody. We'll talk to you on the other side.